Thanks for being here, everybody. My name is Nate Mitchell.
It's 2022, and we're taking you into one of the closed-door sessions at the Arbinger Summit to listen in on a discussion with some Arbinger clients and facilitators who deliver Arbinger's work within their own organizations.
And I want to talk with you a little bit today about a subject that everybody likes talking about, pain. In particular, hidden pain.
Nate Mitchell is a licensed mental health counselor, an adjunct professor of family sciences, and a seasoned facilitator of Arbinger's work, having led hundreds of workshops for parents navigating some of life's toughest moments and providing ongoing support for families in crisis.
When I was a freshman in college, I was taking this course that was about communication, beginning communication class. And the professor went up into the whiteboard, and she drew this little figure right here.
On the whiteboard, Nate drew two stick figures side by side.
It's the exact replica of what she drew. After drawing this figure on the board, she then said, "Anybody who can come up here and circle the human being, 50 extra credit points." It was near the beginning of the course before we figured out that she wasn't grading on points. She offered these 50 extra credit points, and all of us were like, "Oh, I'll do it." So the first person that got up came up and circled this figure right. It's 50-50 chance, if you guess, right? And she said, "You're going to get full credit for your participation, but that's the wrong answer." And then everybody's hand shot up. He got it wrong, so I know exactly which one is right. Come up and circle this one. Again, you're going to get full credit for your participation, but that's also the wrong answer. And then she went on to give her hour and a half lecture that had nothing to do with this diagram. But it was a Friday. I do remember that. The weekend was coming, and she almost left without solving the riddle for us, to leave us with this frustrating riddle all weekend. And before she left, I almost forgot to tell you what the answer to this is. The human being is right here.
Here, Nate drew a circle encompassing the space between the two stick figures.
And that's all she said. And I thought about that a lot. When we came back from the weekend, she talked about this, and it was a really clever setup. But it stuck with me more than anything else that she ever taught. This diagram has come back to me a few different times. People don't exist in isolation. The essential quality of a human being is what happens between them, the connections that are between people. This truth, and when I say truth, I don't mean the thing that's opposite of false. I mean the thing that's opposite of crooked. This truth goes pretty deep. It's not just a feature of being human. It's at the very root of our existence. We don't exist in isolation. We only exist in relation to each other. Even if we try to isolate ourselves the very most that we can, there's no existence in isolation from each other.
Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast, where we explore the tools and ideas we've used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people. I'm McKinley Otterson.
When I was first introduced to the Arbinger ideas, it was after I was trained and educated formally in the area of mental health. And when I learned about all of these Arbinger ideas, it turned everything upside down. Every person that you meet is carrying some burden that you know nothing about. One of the most powerful steps that we can take is to consider the burdens that another person is carrying. What's that hidden pain? And how does that pull us into their humanity? There's pain that we hide. There's all kinds of pain. There's the physical kind that you experience with your mortal body in consequence of your frailties and limitations. And that experience is pretty universal. Some philosophers say that that's the most real thing that there is in our human experience. Think about what would happen if you could successfully eliminate your physical pain. Why do we have pain in the first place? And what do? When you experience pain, what are all the strategies that you employ to end that condition? Sometimes we ignore it. Sometimes we distract ourselves. Sometimes we take medicine. Some of the things that we do to eliminate our pain make it worse. Some of the things actually make it better. But consider what would happen if all of your dreams came true in regards to your physical pain and you never experienced that physical pain anymore. I don't think that we would last long. The physical pain that we experience occurs for a reason. And it's a helpful reason, most of the time, to send us a message, to give us a warning, to help us in some way, to teach us what's good and what's bad for us. You may have some kind of infection, and if you didn't experience some pain, you would never know to investigate that. You may have a broken leg. If you walk on that broken leg too long, there's permanent damage that can be done. It's important to keep in mind that your body was made to heal itself. That doesn't mean that we don't need doctors and we don't need surgeons. We certainly do. But no doctor or surgeon has ever healed you. They have put conditions in place or removed other conditions that make it possible for your body to do its work and heal itself. For example, there's a broken bone in your body. A doctor might set that bone and cast it so that you don't move it around and do more damage to you. But the doctor doesn't heal or regrow the bone. Your body does that. So we still need the function of someone outside of us to help make that happen. But keep in mind that your body was made to heal itself. And that is an analogy to not only the physical kind of pain that you experience, but the non-physical pain too. The social part of you, the mental part of you, the emotional. You were made for connection to other people, just like we saw in my brilliant professor's genius diagram. You may have heard some of these studies about children who experience this failure to thrive if they don't have these connections in spite of the fact that all of their physical needs are met. They may have enough food, enough shelter, enough of those other things, but if they don't have the connection with other humans, it's deadly for them. So, how do we discover the hidden pain of another person? What has the experience been like for you? Have you been on the other side of that equation? Has someone seen you? Seen your hidden pain? Because just like our physical pain, we do a lot of things to avoid or eliminate that pain. There was a story that I heard about a little boy, we'll call him Jake. He was about 5 or 6, and Jake was watching his mom using the sewing machine. It's pretty fascinating when you watch that needle going up and down and the materials going through. He's asking all kinds of questions. And mom is trying to explain how the sewing machine works and warning Jake about the dangers of a sewing machine. Make sure that you don't touch this, but this is how this works. Sometime later, the smaller sibling of Jake comes running to mom and says, "Jake's bleeding." What had happened was Jake had satisfied his curiosity and experimented with the sewing machine. He had gotten his finger under the needle, reacted, and yanked his hand away from it. Jake was a tough kid. Instead of immediately going to his mom, he ran away because he knew that he would be in trouble. Why do we do that? Why do we do that when we're built for the connection? What is that instinct all about? Do we have the right to investigate, to really dig in to someone else's pain? You ever watch a feat of athleticism? Or endurance or some of those things, and you just want to stand up and cheer and you say, that's what a human is. That's what we can do. I'm part of that. That's what a human is. That's what we can do. And then I sit back and I say, they got it covered. Because there's people that are that awesome in the world, humanity is saved. It's not like that. There's something about the inspiration of those stories that calls our hearts to action. Human beings are very interesting because their understandings are different flavors. Human beings are really good at understanding objects and processes with their brain. The brain is your organ of understanding of those things. But when it comes to people and principles, the heart is your organ of understanding for those things. Something that really excites me about hanging out with Arbinger people for a few days is that they get that. How the primary move is to apply your heart to understanding and then apply your brain to solving those problems in that order specifically. So we've got a problem. We've got this problem of hidden pain. I didn't bring any shocking statistics because you already know them. Of the terrible, catastrophic cost. Isolation that's coming from radical individualism. All of the ways that we distract ourselves from that emotional pain. Including, by the way, the pain of boredom. That supercomputer that you have in your pocket ensures that you never have to experience the pain of boredom again. Well, guess what? The experience of boredom is really, really important for humans, especially in connection with each other. Now think about your life and times when you've been really bored with your siblings or your friends, and you came up with something really creative, something amazing to do. Think of how fast you go to that, to distract yourself from that non-physical pain. It's significant. So my question, do you feel like we have the right or the obligation to really dig after the pain of someone else? As Arbinger facilitators, of course we do. But if the shoe is on the other foot, then I'm good. I'm okay. I'll let you know if I have some pain that you need to help me with. What's been your experience? Think of a time that someone has seen your pain. What's that been like?
I would like to see if an example I give you is what you're talking about. My wife and I are elderly, manifestly elderly. We just celebrated our 60th wedding anniversary. We've experienced two things. Number one, there are times when we've wondered why we had to continue in this condition, for our capacities have dwindled and our literal pains, which aren't very visible, get more and more pressing. But we've discovered that our responses to one another's pain has mobilized us to try to help out in ways that never occurred to us before when we were fully capacitated. And that means instead of having an intellectual understanding, we try to do something about it. We don't talk about it. I don't think we've ever talked about it. Just little examples, because we can't do things alone. She can't get off her compression stockings alone. And there's all kinds of other little things, mostly what she's doing for me. But I think that may be a reason why, in spite of the dwindling of romantic notions and capacities, we're more together than we ever have been.
One of the old ways of thinking about, and I think a pretty damaging way of thinking about human relationships, and especially our emotional life, first thing was that it's based on an individual. If an individual has a problem, then the solution is going to come on an individual basis. I can just get some therapy and get myself fixed. And you're going to be extracted from that, come over here and get fixed, and then maybe you'll be worthy to rejoin. So one of the reasons that I like this symbol of community.
Right here, Nate holds up a piece of pottery. It's a pot that's painted with figures that are connected hand to hand and form an unending circle around the outside of this ceramic pot.
You notice all these figures that are in a circle. Each of those figures is connected to each other, connected significantly by their hands. Hands are cool. They open and close by our choice. We choose to connect with each other, to grasp and grip, and tighten those connections. We talk about that community as a we. It's not a me thing. It's not a those people thing. It's we, which in my mind kind of transcends the idea of teamwork or synergy. It's almost like a sacred thing to walk as we, a family, a community, a group like we're in. So I had this experience where I learned a great lesson about what it means to walk as we. I was having some difficulty at work, and one of the staff could see somehow that I was suffering this on my own. Because I didn't want to burden anybody else with it, and I thought that was a pretty noble choice to make. After all, I had gone through the mental exercise, and I knew that even if I told other people this, there's nothing that they could do about it. They can't fix this thing. She pulled me aside, and she said, "You're not asking for help." And I said, "Yeah, that's right, because nobody can really help with this situation." And she said, "That's not the point. The whole idea of we is one rule. Don't be the one to weaken the hoop. When you're making a choice, use that as your basis of decision. Gifts that come to us indirectly. Those of us who are figuratively standing in that circle, clasping hands. The thing that I need will usually come through someone else and be passed along hand to hand until that medicine reaches me. It's that passing along that strengthens that hoop. That's the lesson that I learned. That's informed so many other decisions that I've made. Just think about how deep that goes, that question. Is this move going to strengthen that hoop? Is that going to strengthen we? Part of this old idea, in addition to the radical individualism, is this idea that positive emotions are good and negative emotions are bad. And the aim of all of our work ought to be just maximizing all of our positive emotions and eliminating the negative ones. Think about what happens to your body. If you eliminate all of your physical pain, the same thing will happen to we if we eliminate all of non-physical pain. You lose that signal that tells you to connect. You numb yourself to those messages. When I ask an adolescent, typically, if they have a good relationship with their parents or a bad relationship with their parents, they'll base that evaluation on, am I experiencing friction in that relationship or not? An immature understanding of a relationship. To them, relationship in which they're having a lot of friction, that's a bad relationship. If everything is going just the way that they want and they never have a disagreement, there's no tension there, that's a good relationship. Does that sound familiar to you? Think about the different ways that we see objects. If somebody's a vehicle and I like the smooth ride of that vehicle, that's a good relationship. The fact is that neither of those are an effective connection. Connect through the difficulty. Every fire is made with friction. The act of making friction fire is the practice of creating and managing friction. Think about all the things that fire does for us. Think of that as a symbol of that connection, that spark, how hard we work to gain access to that belonging, that safety, that warmth, that light. We work really hard, and there's a lot of ways to mess it up. But you can't do it without friction. When you think about accessing or discovering someone's hidden pain, or your own, When you think about making the choice to strengthen that hoop, another consideration might be, where's this friction coming from? Is this the kind of friction that's going to refine me and move me more toward the goals that I am looking for? Or is it a waste of my energy? A waste of that resource? It just makes me frustrated and makes me believe the lie that I can't make fire anyway, that I'll never get access to that spark, that source, that light. Where's that friction? Having your eyes open to that. It occurs to me that maybe it's enough to just be curious about that, about the two different kinds of understanding. There's a kind of curiosity that I have that lives in my brain that I want to solve another person as a puzzle. And then there's the curiosity about that person that makes me want to understand them in my heart. Those experiences are not the same, and they can never be. You'll have situations in your life. You already have situations in your life that will fit in this category. That will require all of the faculties that you have of your heart and your brain to engage in that. How do you know when you have successfully hidden your pain? How do you know when it's time to successfully disclose it or share it or connect? If you're a facilitator, there's plenty of opportunities that you have to share your stories. Plenty of opportunities for a little bit of vulnerability. In your professional life, that looks one way. Your personal family life, that's where we practice. As we're talking about these things, what are you thinking about? Hidden pain. Who comes to your mind? There are two ways for us to exit isolation. I want you to consider these two ways. One way is as a unit in a collective. The other way is as a member of a body. Consider those two ways for a moment. Think about times when you have been thinking of yourself just as a unit in a collective. What does that feel like? What's that experience? Just like there's two different definitions of the word true. One of them means opposite of false, and the other one means opposite of crooked. So being a unit in a collective might be truth. It might be a description that is technically accurate. You might be able to defend that, but it doesn't feel the same as being a member of a body. This is what I think of when I think of that. That being a member of a body, like your hands, like your organs, they're so different. By necessity, they're different. By design, they're different. By function, they're different. If we want to include someone, to call them out of isolation, it might be the way to do it. As a member of a body, what would your body say to you if your liver was missing? Is that okay? We'll just get another lung. That'll be just as good. Think about ways that you have excluded yourself from the body, dismembered yourself by not sharing, by not opening, by not asking, by not being, by not seeing.
Please forgive my ignorance, Nate, but I'm thinking about the two ways we exit isolation. You mentioned the first one being as a unit or a collective. So I'm trying to form in my mind the distinction between that and a member of a body. So what example might you share this idea of exiting isolation as a unit or collective?
A unit of a collective. So just like a bunch of different gears in the same machine that are indistinguishable. A box full of tennis balls, whatever you want to think of it as, just another unit. Like every other unit, an organ or a member of a body has a specific function, has a unique design, a purpose that's distinguishable, completely different from every other member of that, and necessary. When I'm just a unit in a collective, it doesn't really matter if I am pulled out or I get replaced by another that's exactly like me. Does that make sense?
This is a response to that drawing up there. I believe that my sensitivity to her pain is a response to her sensitivity to mine. So it's between us that life is happening, not within us exclusively. And then her response to my response to her response is a response to my response. And it doesn't end, and you can't track it. And it's subtle, but it's the most real thing. When we use the words connection, we're already presupposing the independence as being fundamental. But it's how we are together that's fundamental. It's not that we don't breathe independently and think independently. It's that there's something that is more immediate and powerful that would be lost if we lost and knew we had lost the other permanently somehow. I think we may be misled by a false interpretation of our beginnings, that she grew up in Southern California and I grew up in Northern California, and we didn't meet until we were in college. And so these two independent people came together. I think that's the wrong story. I think the story is she grew up in a loving family. And I grew up in a loving family, not demonstrably loving. In fact, far less demonstrably loving than a lot of people are today. But the love was so fundamental. The sacrifice was so unselfconscious, but total, upon the parts of our parents who lived through the Depression and yet set an example of standing and working together. And there never was a question of whether we would be excommunicated from the family or shut out permanently. We were part of a whole. And I think that a transition took place. We never did leave our old family, but something was added to it that compounded it all, that is really quite moving. But it says that this is a fundamentally different way of looking at what it is to be alive as a human being than what we ordinarily assume. We ordinarily assume it's unnatural. You have to stretch somehow. You have to not be yourself in order to give yourself over to somebody else. Well, if you're not giving yourself over to somebody else, you're not who you are. No, this is the way I'm going to live. I'm not alive any other way.
The tendency that we have to isolate is learned. The tendency that we have to be together is not learned. You're born that way. The process that Dr. Warner described of joining lives and living seems to me a process of unbecoming who you never were. Unraveling the lies that you exist by yourself. Outside of that body, outside of that unity.
It isn't easy to unravel this individualistic lie that we exist apart from one another, that we live outside the body of we. But the truth is that we are intrinsically connected, inseparable members of each other. This is the very heart of Arbinger's work. In next week's episode, we'll return for the second part of this conversation, where those in the room share their own experiences and struggles, living and working in recognition of this truth, and find powerful solutions to their challenges as a result. Leading Outward is produced by the Arbinger Institute, the premier provider of leadership development and organizational transformation. If you're ready to build high-performing teams that drive results, explore our solutions at arbinger.com.